Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today we are reflecting on the unrest that's happened in and around South Africa. We saw a lot of looting earlier this month, particularly in South Africa's two economic hubs, the two biggest economic hubs, that is Gauteng province as well as KwaZulu-Natal. And so for today, we decided that we're going to talk to one of the big, one of the largest banks in the country, that is FNB, just to hear, you know, what's been the impact on their business, but more importantly, how are they thinking about rebuilding, and especially when it comes to servicing their clients and the businesses that may be part of their client base. You know, what can they do? What part do they see themselves playing in terms of that rebuilding? Because there's a lot of recovery that needs to happen at this time. So to help us to unpack all of these different issues, we are joined by Jacques Celia, who is the CEO of FNB, to sort of give us some insight. Jacques, greetings to you once again.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and hi to the listeners.
I think a good place for us to start always, because the, you know, usually at the beginning of these sessions, we like to get, you know, a sense of the organization, but there's no need to really introduce FNB because it's one of those that has become a household name in South Africa. So for against that backdrop, you guys have a big retail footprint, one of the big banks. So, you know, from your point of view, the impact just because of the unrest, you know, what happened to FNB's operations?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, that is a very, very good good question. I mean, if you think clearly from an organization, from our perspective, is we are, we exist because of economic activity, right? So we exist because of a farming sector and a retail sector and a manufacturing sector, and people who work in those sectors and those environments, clearly that's what we function for. And ultimately, that basically is the foundation that we need to provide: transactional banking facilities, credit facilities, investment solutions, and more interestingly, even insurance solutions nowadays. You know, it's all of the functions of economic activity. So when economic activity slows down over a period of time, if you think back 2019, we had a gradual slowdown of the economy. Even then, you can plan well for it. We're disappointed with that slowdown is there, but it is what it is, and we hope that the economy could rebound, but we navigate for that. Then you get hit sometimes with big events, like COVID last year was a big event. It was a national event that was unexpected. So that impact is hectic on not just us, but more importantly, you know, the communities at large. And then you can also be impacted by localized, events. And that's where the unrest really hit us on a local level. So in a domestic context, we have some areas that weren't impacted at all, and as you referred to it, Gauteng and KZN was impacted. So the impact then for us is on two fronts. One is on top of an existing challenge that many of those businesses were facing, with lots of challenge to keep their doors open, you know, through the pandemic, that we helped them, and they were unbelievable how people somehow got through that pandemic. Then this event now clearly puts another strain on them. So as the customers then get impacted, we get impacted too, because economic activity doesn't exist or doesn't flow for a specific period of time. And in addition to that, we were also impacted because many of our infrastructure was also destroyed. So ATMs and branches and speed point terminals, and so we've on all these fronts have been challenged. But fortunately, we're a very stable business. We've got very strong balance sheets. We're very well insured, and we can respond to many of these events, although they take a little bit of time to get our stuff all back on track. The real sad part for us here is businesses that themselves are just basically, you know, run out of steam. You know, there's, you know, we will get through this, but for many people out there, it's really tough. It was almost like, this is the last thing they needed on top of a very, very challenging COVID existence, you know. So, So we've got a big job to do to try and rebuild and get those people to see some positivity and opportunity again back in their environments, you know. So that's in a nutshell really the broader impact.
You know, there's a lot that's been said and a lot to, you know, that one could possibly unpack, you know, over there, and especially on the business, you know, on the business front, because you guys do service consumers and businesses. So from that point of view, one of the big questions that people have been asking is, you know, a lot of businesses suffered during this time. I think we've seen numbers ranging between 40,000 and 50,000 businesses, you know, impacted, a lot of them very small, you know, very small operations. And in some cases, some of them even uninsured. What type of help, you know, have you guys been able to actually come up with? Because I think everyone is focusing on this insurance issue. But earlier on, when I was just reading through the list of, you know, the interventions that you guys seem to have come up with, it seems to have, you know, you're looking at the holistic financial picture of a business. So maybe you could talk to us just around how you guys came up with the interventions that you guys came up with.
Okay, so from a business perspective, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a few categories that you can look at it. The first category is you can say who was insured and who wasn't insured. And then on top of that, you can do another category that says who's working in an industry or in a sector that can respond quite quickly, and others, you know, will take some time to respond. Or you could also look at businesses that were quite healthy before this event against those who were very unhealthy from a financial resource perspective. And so the approach we have for all of these things is just to always put a range of solutions down that we can help our customers navigate dependent on their circumstances. In our world, the first job we had to do was to get back our infrastructure onto the ground in those little local communities, as you refer to them. You know, it's critical for us to get the flow of money going again, to get infrastructure for banking, to get ATMs, to get branches to function, and then for our talent and our skills on the ground to be able to, for customers to get advice, right? You know, should I do this? Should I do that? How do I deal with this? How do I deal with it? Can I apply? Can't I apply? Can I help insurance? Can't I? You know, if we're not close on the ground, especially in areas where technology constraints are a little bit, you know, not as advanced, so people still need that personal touch. You know, it's critical for us to get that right. So that was, as an industry, actually, we all got together just after the riots and said, you know, let's make sure that we rebuild quickly. Communities, when they see a branch and they see an ATM, you know, all of a sudden it feels normal and it feels better. It feels trusted, and we need to get that out. So we're rushing that as an industry. And in fact, we're also working well together because, you know, think of someone like, you know, social grants, you know, receiver now, you know, ATMs are constrained. You know, how do we get that close to them? Also, our one bank's ATMs might be damaged. The other banks aren't yet. And so can I use each other's, you know, ATMs? And so we've waived those SaaSwitch fees, for example, to just get people, you know, that comfort, that infrastructure on the ground is available for them to exist. All right. But then when it gets to the businesses, now clearly, here's where it's a dynamic of each individual sort of businesses a bit differently. But for example, some businesses can actually just, their building wasn't so much destroyed. It was just potentially some of the stuff was stolen. That just means we must help them with a bit of short-term debt to get the stock back onto the shelves. That's not so hard to get done, especially if the little business is actually a trading and has got trading records with us. We know how much more or less they do a turnover per month, and we can, on the back of expected, you know, sort of trade, then facilitate another credit extension for them to get restocked. Others, unfortunately, their whole little setup was broken and destroyed. That means a rebuild of infrastructure. And some of those infrastructures need, you know, insurance claims to first be processed. They need to get through a process of, you know, just understanding whether the entrepreneur and the business owner actually wants to rebuild and go through that. Or do they want to relocate and go and find another spot where they actually wanted to? Or potentially they want to merge a business or two or find a different venue. So there's some credit decisions that can only happen once we have the business decisions made by a business owner or an entrepreneur. And then on top of that, clearly the complexities of insurance claims, you know, the first thing is to get a claim in. Some of these business owners haven't been back to their business yet just to be able to complete the claim. And then for the assessments to get the assessors to get out there and to complete it, and then for the insurance companies to pay out. And so in this period where they constrained a little bit with certainty, we've gone the extra mile and we're saying we're going to treat it almost like the same we treated in the COVID period last year, where we give people this opportunity to give their 3 month payment holiday if they need that. Most people just need like a month or two and then they get themselves back on track. But potentially they might need the three months. And up to that, we've given them that freedom, and that will give them a little bit of space to get those insurance proceeds or business plans right, or, you know, configuration, what they want to do. So it gives it a little bit of breathing space. But ultimately it's about that confidence level. So we must get the community in the streets to trade again. We must get people to feel safe to be out and about. You know, we need to get that, I call it from the war zone to a safe zone and then into opportunity zone. You know, because if you can get that right, then people invest in your communities, they put the infrastructure down, they've got a long-term agenda, they want to support them, you know, and ultimately then we must be the bank to support them with that. So it's going to be a bit of a bumpy road for a month or two or three, but our teams are very, very motivated to be on the ground with expertise and capacity to help our businesses.
Now, one can imagine the complexity, because you just highlighted it right now, and there's so many different things to think about, so many variables. You know, does the person have, was it the entire building that was damaged, or is it just part? Is it a stocking issue? Is it, you know, insurance, non-insurance? Have they been there, not been there? Do they have employees? Do they have, you know, and all of these things to think about. So from that point of view, when it comes to interventions, you know, maybe taking a step back, right? Do you think, because we've sort of seen different corporates actually coming to the party, which should be commended during this time, but you see people responding in different ways. You guys have come up with your set of interventions, you know, that are sort of helping to give financial flexibility to people, especially the small businesses. But, you know, others are giving, I don't know, money, grants, etc. You know, so is this a situation where it's best to sort of resume normal trading, or is this a situation where we give out money and in hopes that, you know, one day it will return?
let me just put it like this. We always have a multidimensional response. So we too have done a lot of grant and donation, especially in the food side. I think the current quantum sits around 20 million rand is what we would probably have, you know, sort of spent over the next 2 or 3 months, you know, in supporting local communities to get that food is a critical thing, to get a little bit of safety, to get some supply chains and distribution models open. So we are doing some significant grant work ourselves that is actually happening. But obviously that's a little drop in the ocean. Unfortunately, you know, obviously we have a very responsive government, and so they've introduced meaningful interventions that certainly can help a little bit. But you know, ultimately you need economic activity and jobs so people can look after themselves, as opposed to having to rely on these grant things. So we do every time where there's a little bit of crisis or an event, whether it's a flood or a fire, or in this case, riots, we are very responsive day one with a bit of always that relief stuff that people need, you know, while they're just getting their lives reconfigured. And so we did respond to that day one already, or day two already of the riots. So people have been out there, and it's been incredible. Our people, our employees at FNB and the broader First Rand Group have really been unbelievably responsive to responding to those community needs. And ECDs, old age homes, you know, we help these things feed those little kids and even with it, to the extent that we still have got so much unfinished business as it relates to COVID, you know, they're helping these little environments where they are so vulnerable. You know, where would they get food and get stuff for the next month or so as the local, you know, sort of retailers had to restock. So there's been a tremendous amount of effort from everyone on that front, but this it can't stop with a grant or two. It needs to get that economic stability back. It needs to get government to do their part to get the safety and security and to do the incentives that will get people to invest there. And then for us to play our part to facilitate that, you know, when there's an opportunity in an environment, the nice thing with challenges like these, they expose the real need and they expose the real, you know, the real infrastructure that is needed as an example. And because interest rates are low at the moment, great opportunity to build and to create jobs. All of the rebuild now will create jobs again and people will be able to, you know, sort of participate. Although it's a very, very traumatic experience we've gone through. We're going to have to, you know, put it behind us and focus on the restock and the rebuild.
And speaking of that rebuild, we recently had an opportunity to talk to the guys over at BankServe, and they recently came out with their transaction index, you know, and they did an interesting study about, you know, those 15 days or so during which the unrest happened, actually showing that there was, you know, a decrease in terms of transaction volumes because of the unrest as compared to the previous month. And at the same time, we, you know, recently spoke to the Bureau of Economic Research that works with FNB on the Consumer Confidence Index. And, you know, all of those factors are down. So against the backdrop of all of that, right, how hopeful are you about that rebuild, about the country moving forward, at least in an economic sense? Because like you said at the beginning, COVID, sluggish growth, unrest, and whatever else may or may not happen, you know, consumers and businesses are already under so much pressure.
Yeah, so we have been tracking at a micro level economic activity very, very carefully over the last year. Certainly going into COVID, as you know, it was slowing down, as I said earlier, and then COVID had a major impact. And then we were actually looking forward to a bit of a rebound this year when it was actually looking quite promising. You know, when many people, you know, somehow had been able to reconfigure their financial affairs and they, you know, got the side hustles going and they got their little businesses going and their jobs and people were really trying to defend their jobs and really working hard. And, So it was looking very promising. Clearly, we were needing one big element, and that was the vaccination program. That, fortunately, you know, although we had a slow start, seems to have gaining a lot of momentum. And if you look around the world, the excitement when the doors open and people can get back to a little bit of normality in how they can move around, that has got a big impact on not only the psychology of society, but then also on the commercial activity. So that was something that we're looking forward to. Obviously, then this thing hit us now, so we're going to take a little bit of a dampener on our excitement. But certainly, fortunately, some areas of our country still wasn't affected. And then also within that context, there are some industries that are just incredible. The logistics industry, the farming industry, the mining industry, you know, some of our core stuff that are really, really, really firing. Unfortunately, tourism, as you know, is doesn't yet have the framework within which it can grow, but we hope that the vaccination game can give us a little bit of a lift in that too. So there are multiple things at play here. We were never expecting our economy to rebound, given our own domestic challenges on policy uncertainties and stuff. We were never expecting that to end this year as like a glory years where, don't worry, all of our problems have gone away. But fortunately, we've been helped a little bit by the global activities and all those global, you know, the developed markets, how they've responded and recovered. And clearly, our product is in demand, mining and agriculture and stuff into those markets. So we've had some tailwinds. But the real ask is still for us to solve our own domestic issues, you know, to get our own house in order so that we can have sustainability in how we build our economy and create jobs. And so you would have seen, for example, today we also, and I must applaud Capitec, they also came out, let's recruit people, you know, let's recruit our talent. Let's make sure that we keep, you know, let's all of us as corporates where we can and enterprises where we can create some inspiration for talent to be excited to be here, to tackle these challenges and each of us can play our part, you know. So we've also, you know, sort of identified a whole bunch of new roles that we want to recruit into, that we think could be a really meaningful contributor to the country to keep our talent here. Because, you know, you can't kickstart these things if you don't have talent, right? And you can't, you can't participate in an economy if there's not a lot of opportunities for people to grow and to create their careers. And so we've all got a job to do, to create jobs, to create careers, and to help the economy recover. You know, it'll be inch by inch, little bit by little bit. But if we all put our efforts in, this could be the magic that from this low base that we owe ourselves.
Now, as we end off, sort of bringing everything that you've said, that you've highlighted, especially that coordinated response, right, where everyone is doing their own little piece to help, with the rebuild. From an F&B point of view, how are you thinking about, your own business going forward? Because I want to just zone in on just one point. I think F&B has been in an environment where people are reducing their retail space and all of that. F&B has been one of the few places to say, listen, there's still space for banking halls. We just feel like they should be reimagined, but we still feel like there's a place for them. And before the unrest came into effect, there had been an announcement from F&B that you were going to invest in bank branches, I think 50 or something like that. So from that point of view, how are you guys thinking about, that type of thing, especially in light of the rebuild and what's happened?
Yeah, it's an exciting, agenda for us. It's hard for us all to deal with load shedding. It's hard for us all to deal with the pandemic, and it's hard for us all to deal with disruptions in the physical forms of money, cash, and ATMs, and these things with the riots, after the riots, they really hit us hard. But in a way, they have helped us actually continue and in speed up our modernization agendas in financial services specifically. So you would see how we're celebrating on a daily basis, increasingly record achievements on digital penetrations, people using, cell phone bankings and wallets and cards and electronic payments and QR codes and, all forms of electronic payment mechanisms, as well as increasingly forms of efficient distribution of loans, apply online, click to get your loan approved, click to get your business opened and your accounts opened, and so it's all this ability to modernize our society into modern, financial services. And as an example, delighted that last year we could finally switch off the old form of a checkbook, right? In November last year, December, we were able to switch that off. So what happens with these things is that they help us expedite modernization, because that is ultimately what helps us to bring access out more. While some people feel that they're vulnerable on digital platforms, they're actually our answer to their challenges. Most of our solutions lie in how we can solve for customers and their context and their special needs through delivery through mechanisms of digital, as opposed to the old way of, come to our big branches. And so that what inspired us on the branch footprint perspective is that now that our tools are so mobile, you could sit in a Wimpy and see a banker, and you can sit in stand in a retailer queue and get financial advice. So our devices have really been able to democratize and enhance our distribution, so we can really get down to that point of presence. But what we do know is the importance of a local market presence. In the old days, historically, we needed to have these big branches. They were 1,500 or 2,000 square meter branching halls, which are really big environments and very complex and expensive to put up. Nowadays, our branch fits in a container and a small little shop. And so we are able to much more nimbly bring our people, closer to the market, closer to our clients. So closest to the distribution points, whether it's a retailer distribution market node or whether it's a transport node. I mean, our job is to make sure that we're around the corner, right? And that means more points of presence. It doesn't mean more large, big, old ones. It means these little nimble ones where people can come for advice, come sit. We can explain to you how our solutions work and how the, digital apps work and how the cards work and everything. And we can also give you advice, how to start your business, how to claim for insurance, how to invest for your retirement, how to get your kids to school. It's all of these little financial advice and money management need, our customers need, you know. For 183 years that we've been in existence, people have always needed financial advice, and most of it is always delivered through the human. And in 182 years from today, I argue, people will still need financial advice, and they'll still need to every now and again speak to a warm body. Clearly, our tools must enable those warm bodies to be a hero in their customers' eyes, right? If I can give you the great advice on the tip of it, you know, on the front of the screen, you know, by a click of a button, I can give you the right advice. That's what we ultimately need to do. And that's what we owe society. We need that on the ground experts that can help them with whatever it is that they faced on a daily basis. And that's our commitment, you know, and that ultimately hopefully means people will see us not like the big shopping mall example, but much more the local little shop around every corner is to have people right, you know, in our environments close to where the communities are.
So that's been us. We're talking to Jacques Celia, who is the CEO of FNB, just around the impact of the recent unrest on consumers and businesses around South Africa, especially in those two big provinces. And he was saying that it's been a big hit for their customers, but they've come up with some solutions that will be helping them. They've joined a number of different corporates that are lending their ears, their eyes, and resources to try and assist with the rebuild. I think one of the big themes from this discussion and everything that Jacques was saying is flexibility, because that's what they are offering to their clients, both on the consumer and business side. They're saying that financial flexibility is something that they've come to the table with. But at the same time, he's talking about flexibility and how they also operate in terms and how they're thinking about their own local presence in the different communities within which they operate. Jacques, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Maria.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Always good to see and hear corporate citizens coming to the table, especially when it comes to a national effort like the rebuild that's happening now. No doubt that the likes of FNB, together with their comrades in the rest of the industry, are doing what they can to actually help out, because their own businesses have been impacted quite a lot. But at the same time, their businesses are largely consumer facing, so there needs to be that response that actually caters to their own operations, but at the same time brings some type of assistance to their clients, customers, and the communities within which they operate, right? But I think the word flexibility, which was highlighted during the conversation, is a big piece of that, because most of the time when things are wrong or things go awry, usually people feel like they're caught between a rock and a hard place. And that's where the debate comes in. That's why I asked the question to Jacques, to say, is this an issue of, let's say, on the businesses side, because that's one of the big ones that people are concerned about. Is it about giving businesses money, or is it about just giving them the room to be able to rebuild, their operations, actually have that courage to continue going forward? Because one can only imagine that if your business has been impacted, you don't have insurance, you've got people to pay, or you've got maybe outstanding loans, whatever it is, you need to put food on the table. And depending on how big your operation is, you might even be responsible for putting food on the table for a number of employees, for example. All you want to do is to get back on your feet, start operating again, right? And for those that maybe are feeling like they've had enough or have been discouraged by everything that's happened, giving them that ability to say, listen, you can, come in, there is an option, there's room for you to breathe and actually start operating again. So it will be good to see what actually happens on the ground in terms of all of these responses and interventions, and you know, hopefully we'll see even more approaches coming from various people in the corporate sector trying to do their bit together with everything else that's going on, because this is it's an effort that needs a holistic approach from the government, from the people, from businesses, everyone just moving towards that rebuilding, but not only rebuilding but making things better for everyone going forward. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.